The Old Testament reading for the second Sunday in Advent is Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 10. A familiar passage because of the spirit of phrasing, and then also the peaceable kingdom, the eschatological view with the peaceful setting among the animals and so forth. I'd like to kind of back up just a little bit. The background for this passage, I think, goes at least to 10:33, where it says, begins with a hene and says, "You see, Yahweh of hosts is about to lop off branches with a crash." And I think that if you were to go back and check and just sort of notice the tree and axe and, you know, cutting down and that kind of imagery, you could go back even farther, perhaps even as far back as 6:13, the last verse of the direction to Isaiah in his call includes tree and stump imagery, though not the same vocabulary. And that's what's kind of interesting about this text, is the nature of the vocabulary. Now, although the Masoretic text shows a paragraph marker, a setumah, and a lectionary, a seder, the big psalmic division between 10:34 and 11:1, the perfect while consecutive, vayatzah, indicates connection. So in a way, lectionary readings then, as now, are not always selected in accordance with the logic of texts. If we take just a quick look at 33 and 34, you can see that it's Hine Ha'adon Yahweh Tzivaoth. Then the first word after Tzivaoth, Misa'ef, is a participle. That actually is a little bit of a pattern in Isaiah to have Hine plus a participle, and actually having Yahweh as the subject of the activity. And that's the one that talks about how he's going to cut off branches with a crash. The next line of 33 actually is a nominal clause, v'rame ha-koma, and rame, kind of high ones or exalted ones, from the root room, and then ha-koma from the root kum, also kind of a rising sort of thing. So it's kind of like the highest of the high, so to speak. And then followed by a passive participle form, geduim, that they are, it's parallel with the shafal in the second half of that line, and that also talks about sort of being brought down, being denigrated as opposed to being raised up. And so you've got a pattern where you've got this adjectival or predicate adjective construction, the yish palu at the end. Shafal is, I guess, sort of tantamount to a stative verb, be brought low. It's verse 34 that's kind of interesting, because all of the English versions that I've seen translate that as sort of resuming Yahweh as subject, the nikaf, sivke hayar, and so forth, that he will strike down the forests with iron, with an axe. And yet it's the form, the nikaf, you have to ask, is the doubled kof because it's a pal perfect, which is possible, or is it because of the assimilation of a nun and it's actually a nifal, which would have it become something that's passive again? The forests, or the thickets of the forest, are cut off with iron, or have been cut off. And then the last phrase, ha-levanon ba'dir yapol, yapol from nafal, also here an intransitive verb. So the thing is that in that respect, 33 is the only thing that announces Yahweh as agent. The balance of 33 and verse 34 are describing the circumstances, and now 11, 1 through 10, extend those circumstances. And that's where we want to pick up. So, Vayatza Choter Megeza Yisai. A branch or shoot will go out from the stem or root of Jesse. The Netzer Misharashal Yefreh. Netzer, another word for branch or shoot, from the roots of, or from his roots will bear fruit. Para, in elementary Hebrew here, I think we still learn the vocabulary pari, fruit, and para is the verbal association with bearing fruit. I think important to notice at the outset that we think in terms of something that has to do with the line of David, but just recognize that by going back to the stem or shoot of Jesse, that we're actually backing up so that we can get not simply somebody who is who follows David, but who actually is like a new David because it comes out of the stem of Jesse. A new David, not merely a continuation of the Davidic line. And I suppose one has to acknowledge that it's well hidden here, but there is a hint then, by going back this way, that here is how we can have somebody who is David's son and also David's Lord. Verse 2, Vanacha alau Ruach Yahweh. And I'll just do that one, and then we'll get into the qualifying clauses that follow. And the Spirit of Yahweh will rest, Nacha, from the verb, the root, Nuch, a hollow root, will rest upon him. What kind of spirit is this? Ruach Chochmah Uvina, Ruach Etza Ugivura, Ruach Da'at Vayirat Yahweh. Spirit of wisdom and understanding or discernment, spirit of sort of testimony or witness and strength or power, Yivura, Ruach Da'at, spirit of knowledge, and the fear of Yahweh. Now, it's interesting to notice that all of these words, if you do kind of a, just even a fast concordance study, is that these are all wisdom terms. The bulk of their occurrences occur in Job and Proverbs, and to some extent also in Psalms, especially Givurah. In the prophetic corpus, there is a tendency for these to occur more often in Isaiah than in some of the other prophets, certainly in the minor prophets. What I think that this helps to demonstrate is wisdom and prophecy actually occurring alongside each other, because sometimes scholarship wants to think of a little bit more stretched out timeline. The other is the importance of recognizing that biblical wisdom is life congruent with God's design. And so the spirit who is defined sort of elaborated in connection with all of these terms has to do with the fundamental connection between Yahweh and his spirit and the attributes that pertain also to that spirit. And of course that one is this verse together with the first clause of verse 3 are used oftentimes in connection with confirmation kinds of things. Now, it is interesting to notice the first clause of 3. V'hariho b'yirat Yahweh. And if we just sort of pause there, because the Athnach is there, just notice that hariho is a hyphial infinitive construct of a verb root, ruch or ruach. Most of the versions translate it as something like his delight, is in the fear of Yahweh. But if we try to make use of the Ruach as spirit sort of thing, there is something about the presence of the Spirit of Yahweh in the branch so that the branch's sort of, let's say, spiriting is in line with the Spirit of Yahweh. The branch has a unique oneness with Yahweh, and his activity is, which we'll get described next, is informed by that resting spirit as follows. The balance of verse 3. Velo lemar'e einal yishpot, velo lemishma oznal yokiach. Not in relation to appearance or seeing of his eyes, will he judge. He will not judge according to just sort of what his eyes see. I realize I stuck that just in there. And the second clause, he will not, yakach is also sort of a judge or deciding word. He will not decide or judge in relation to what his ears hear. So it's visual evidence or circumstances, or auditory evidence or circumstances, are not the exclusive determiner in terms of how this one renders decisions and carries out judging. Verse 4, the Shafat Betzedek Dalim, I would be inclined to translate the little conjunction there, Vav, as kind of a rather stronger one, sort of like, but rather, because of the parallels between Shafat in the preceding verse and Yakach in the preceding verse, rather he will judge the poor or the disadvantaged, the Dalim, with righteousness. And he will, Hokiach, b'mishor la anve aretz, and he will decide, or again, sort of render judgment in respect to the afflicted of the earth with uprightness. Behind the mishor is the root yashar. So what it really amounts to is not just kind of making decisions on the basis of appearances, but in terms of a standard that actually occurs, or standards that occur sort of above and behind the circumstances that are before him, which is important. Tzedek and especially tzedakah and mishpat are a frequently used pair in Isaiah. Doesn't happen to occur here, except in the juxtaposition of the root Shafat and Tzedek. Let's see, the balance of 4. The Hikha Eretz B'Shevet Piu. He will Hikha, strike, smite earth with the rod of his mouth. The element of the word. Ubaruach sefatau yamit rasha. Had a brain glitch. His lips. With the spirit of his lips, the fatal, he will administer to the evildoers, Rasha. Verse 5, V'hayat Tzedek Ezor Matnal, and it will be, righteousness will be the belt or girdle of his loins, matnayim, a loins word. Baha umanah ezor chalatzal. Chalatzal and matnau are parallel, again having to do with sort of the midsection, and ezor is repeated. The belt of his middle, his waist, or something like that, is faithfulness, umanah. I tried to see whether I could make anything out of the fact that it actually has the article there, but that's the only the only time that's actually used, other than one other time in Jeremiah 7. So nothing that jumps out as being significant at that point. Verse 6, Lagar Zeith Im Kevis V'Namer Im Gdi Yerbats. Gar from Gur, a sojourn word, the wolf, Zeev, here we get into a dictionary exercise, the wolf will sojourn with lamb, and leopard with the kid, kind of a young goat, will stretch out, as in kind of lie down or sojourn. The eagle, u kefir, u meri yachdal, calf and young lion and sort of fattened calf or something like that together. Just a kind of an interesting fun facts to know and tell about Isaiah is that he likes making lists. And notice how this one is two and then two and then three, and each of these little collections, the first one has the verb gar, the second one has yerbats, and the third one doesn't have a verb, but it does have the adverb together, so that you've got sojourn, stretch out, and all of this stuff happens among the animals together. So that's, I'll say poetic, even though I think that it is poetic in the sense of artful as opposed to poetic in the sense of poetry, like evenness of rhythm or meter or something like that. Let's see, 7. Ufara vadov tirena, unusual to see a third plural feminine verb form. They just don't occur that often, even though we learn them at the beginning. Cow and the bear will pasture. Notice the root underneath the tir ena is ra'ah, and we probably see that more often in a kind of a participial or noun form, ro'eh, one who is a shepherd or conducts animals in pasture. And then yahdal yirbatsu yaldehen. Together they will stretch out. Who will? Their young ones will. The yaldeh from yelad or yeladim with the third plural pronominal suffix. The aryeh kibakar yokal teven. Finishes out the verse. A lion, like the big domestic animal, bakar, will eat straw, hay, fodder, stuff like that. So, see, 6 and 7 show us these combinations of animals that are lying down together and that it actually extends to the business of eating. Verse 8. V'sha yonek al hur patan. V'al me'urat tzifa oni gamul yado hada. Okay. That the shisha is a pill pail that has to do with kind of, it's been sort of extrapolated, I think, to play. The sucking, the nursing child, the yonake, will kind of play or be around upon the hole or of a patan, some kind of venomous snake. it sounds like Python, but it's I forget what the versions tend to use, but you know, it's just sort of a little bit wider open. Cobra, I think, is maybe the one they use there. But Rat Sefaoni, and upon the, and notice the, in the middle of the Urat, the Aleph, Vav, Resh, or BDB calls it a light hole of another kind of poisonous snake, Zepha. So the thing is that what we're simply to, we're certainly to picture is that a very vulnerable thing, a nursing child, is in what in any other circumstances would be a most at-risk kind of situation, but is able to do so without harm. Gamul Yado Hada, his or its hand. The gamul is in contrast to the yonake. The gamul is the child who has been reared or weaned, as opposed to the nursing child. So a little bit older child, also his hand kind of reaches out in these places. So kind of both categories, the young, the littlest child and a bigger child, but they both play in the streets without problems. Verse 9. Lo yareu velo yashitu bekol har kadshi. They will not, and yareu from ra'a, they will not do bad or evil. And the thing is, it's not necessarily a moral sense, though moral evil can never be entirely missing, but it's they will not do something that is harmful or injurious, nor will they do anything that brings ruin or corruption on all the mountain of my holiness, on my holy mountain, Yahweh's holy mountain. Ki mal'ah aretz, Deya et Yahweh, for the earth will be full or filled of the knowledge of Yahweh, or filled with knowing Yahweh. Deya, a little bit, just another kind of variation on things like da'at. Kamayam layam mikasim, like the waters in relation to the sea are a covering. Just kind of notice the, I guess the construction there. We tend to think in terms of the sea as the water and everything below, whereas they have in a sense sort of elaborated the sea now at this point as that which contains water. So kind of the sea bottom, but it's. The magnitude of the covering of the filling of the earth with the knowledge of Yahweh is like this. And then verse 10, Bahaya Bayom Ahu. Notice that we cross a paragraph boundary. There's a petuka at the end of 9, and it will be in that day. Shorsh Yesai. Back in verse 1, we had the Megeza Yesai, the stem or stump of Jesse. And we had the Misharashau, his roots. Now we have Shorish, root, Yesai, repeated. It will be in that day, the root of Jesse, which stands as a nace of peoples. Nace, signal, standard, ensign, something of that sort. But just sort of recall that it also happens to be the word that is used when Moses to put the snake on a stick, Nason in Numbers 21. So it'll be this kind of a standard of the peoples, to him, Elal, Goyim, Yidroshu, nations will inquire to or of him or seek for him. The Hayatha Minukato Kavod, his resting place. The Minukha is from the root, again, Nuch, to rest. And I think the real question here, his resting place will be glory, is to ask, is it the place where he, that is the root of Jesse, rests, or is it the rest that one finds in him? And it's interesting to take a look at the commentators, because some just try to make it as the place where the righteous branch will rest, will be glory. Leupold actually does it the other way, and has it as being, you know, that what the nations seek in him is regarded as found in terms of kavod, not glory as we might sort of picture splendor or something like that, but more along the lines of the safety and security that are part and parcel of the peaceful kingdom. Well, in terms of preaching, the branch certainly is our Lord, the one who is anticipated. I think that it may be helpful to keep in mind the stuff in 10:33 and 34, because they provide a backdrop that says that the arrival of the righteous branch and so on doesn't happen just sort of apart from a context of judgment, a pathway through judgment. And of course, we understand that there is considerable compression between the onset of, the first coming of the righteous branch and the kingdom that ensues because he does his work. Any questions?
Phil, I'd just like to comment on that interesting point you were making about poetry in 6 with Yadao. Mm-hmm. That there was verb, and then an adverb. Mm-hmm. That pattern is recognizable all throughout scriptures, including the New Testament, of when you have a list, very regularly the last item of the list will be different, which signals the change coming. And an excellent example is in 1 Corinthians 15, 42 to 44a, where Paul has this parallel construction going, then when he gets to the last element, he changes it, and then the list is coming to an end. So I think that's probably, I don't know that I could ever show that was a Hellenic thing, a Greek mm-hmm. thing. I think that's probably a Semitic thing. Mm-hmm. But it's all over the New Testament.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and Isaiah really does it a lot.